Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and as a listener of Intelligent Medicine, you can try a bottle of their finest artisanal olive oil, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. I've been enjoying these harvest fresh olive oils for years. They are far and away the brightest, most lively, and flavorful olive oils I've ever tasted. Their antioxidants and polyphenols are off the charts because they're fresh from the harvest. They make store-bought olive oils taste dull and flat by comparison. Taste for yourself. Check out this generous trial offer and get your $39 bottle for a buck with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. Myfavoriteoliveoil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoff, and we're talking to Dr. Peter Langdon, who's coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol pioneer. He and his father, Per Langdon, were among the first to recognize the clinical importance of coenzyme Q10 and its application to heart problems. So a great debt of, you know, I owe you guys a great debt of professional gratitude because I think I've helped innumerable patients with this exciting paradigm. You launched a revolution in the supplement industry because this is really an amazing supplement. It's something with, its name should be a clue. It's called their ubiquinol and ubiquinone, you know, related to the word ubiquitous in terms of their action on every cell in the body. In 2008, you wrote a paper called Supplemental Ubiquinol in Patients with Advanced Congestive Heart Failure. You know, tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. Coenzyme Q10 exists in two states. It's oxidized state, which is ubiquinone, and it's reduced state, which is ubiquinol. And our bodies use both. There's a cycle between the two. When Q functions as a coenzyme, it's in its oxidized or ubiquinone state. And if this whole process of, you know, ATP production, it becomes reduced. It turns into ubiquinol. This is in your mitochondria. And then it interacts with the equally ubiquitous free radicals in mitochondria, and it becomes oxidized. So it buffers your free radicals, and then in its oxidized state, it functions as a coenzyme. So it's a beautiful cycle. And supplemental Q, for a long time, more than 25 years, maybe closer to 30, was very simple. It was all produced predominantly by yeast fermentation by the Japanese. Mm-hmm. And it was very stable, and it was in its oxidized ubiquinone state, which is a beautiful bright orange crystalline powder. And so things are very simple. There was all the Q in the world was basically the same, and it was all good. Well, about 6, 7, 8 years ago, probably, a variety of companies, at least 6 in China, started making enormous quantities of Q, predominantly the ubiquinone variety. And unfortunately, the Q produced by the Chinese companies is not good. There's a lot of what we call ghost peaks or contaminants.
Mm-hmm. Because fermentation is really tricky. You can get, you know, toxic or useless byproducts unless you purify it.
Well, actually, the Chinese don't do it by fermentation. There's some sort of crazy partial synthesis that they use. Hmm. But when you ferment, you know, there's a strain. There are several strains of yeast that produce the exact same Q we do, coenzyme Q10. You know, most yeast are coenzyme Q7. They're shorter chains. But anyway, there are some that are CoQ10. So they produce a huge amount of this Q. It can be easily extracted, and then it just crystallizes out. So when it's made by the Japanese, it's unbelievably pure. There's nothing else in it. Anyway, this has greatly confused things. So now you have most CoQ10 by far. It's on the market, and it doesn't say made in China. it's not good. And so what we've done over the past several years is we've, just because of this reason, we've used the Japanese company Kaneka, that's K-A-N-E-K-A. They have a huge plant in Houston that produces all of the, they produce the reduced form of Q, ubiquinol, probably all the Q for all of North America. And it's good. And then there's a dozen or more companies that encapsulate that. Ubiquinol is a little better absorbed than ubiquinone. You know, if you get it from the same manufacturer and you compare them side by side. Both would work. The only problem with ubiquinone is at the moment we don't have a reliable producer of it.
Except for the Kaneka. I mean, if you get it from Kaneka, it's
well,
CoQ10.
They're both CoQ10. The Kaneka factory in Houston, they just produce that reduced form, the ubiquinol.
Oh, just ubiquinol. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
So that's what we've been using the last several years.
Right. Actually, interestingly, in your paper, you report an instance where a patient who was given, you know, really massive amounts of CoQ10, 900 milligrams per day, apparently wasn't responding, and then instead took ubiquinol. Actually, there's a series of patients, if I have this correct,
right.
Reading the abstract here, and the ubiquinol was successful where the ubiquinone, or the CoQ10, was less efficacious, and dramatically so. I mean, ejection fraction up 22%, up to 39%, clinical improvement, less breathlessness, ability to traverse longer distances. So your conclusion was ubiquinol has dramatically improved absorption in patients with severe heart failure. Maybe not everybody needs to take ubiquinol, but your issue is not so much with the superiority of ubiquinol, it's just the reliability of the source of CoQ10.
That's the biggest. Now, you're right. Now, if you, and we've done this and published it, if you look at healthy volunteers, the ubiquinol is better absorbed than ubiquinone, anywhere from 1.5 to say 2 times better. Mm-hmm. But in patients with advanced heart failure, and they don't absorb anything all that great, then there's a bigger spread. And yeah, we definitely have patients with New York Heart Association class 4 heart failure that ubiquinol is easily up to 4 times better absorbed. Well, actually, sometimes it doesn't matter how much ubiquinone you give. You can't get their blood level up until you switch it to ubiquinol. Mm-hmm. So yes, in these really bad heart failure patients, in fact, we only use ubiquinol in them. And actually right now, we pretty much only recommend ubiquinol because it's very reliable. It's a real good product. So that's what we use.
So the question arises, you know, obviously you're going to use, you know, pretty heroic amounts in a patient with, you know, breathlessness and, you know, their lungs are filling up with fluid and, you know, their ankles are all edematous. Those are, you know, serious heart failure patients. You might use like, 500, 600, 900 of ubiquinol, which is going to be a little pricey, but hey, you know, it's therapeutic and the medications cost many times that. But what about, you know, just a healthy middle-aged person who wants to get the benefits of mitochondrial protection from either coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol?
Right. On the really sick people, let me just say one other point. There's a saturation effect on any given dose of Q at around 200 milligrams. So in these really sick people, we'll have them take 200 milligrams with fat. And we actually have them, this is important, we have them chew or pop open those soft gels, mm-hmm. 3 times a day. And we didn't figure this out until just over the past year, but the ubiquinol, because it's less stable, it's more sensitive to light and oxygen, it has a thicker gelatin soft gel around it. Mm-hmm. And it's not the easiest thing. You have to be able to break that up completely in your stomach because mm-hmm. Q is absorbed in the very first part of your small intestine. Mm-hmm. So in these really sick people, we watched their Q levels pretty carefully, and their levels were not as high as they should be for the amount of Q they were taking. But if we have them bite the soft gels, you know, break it open, it's quite good. So it's important to do that. In fact, I recommend that all these soft gels be chewed.
That's news we can all use. I mean, I can easily do that. I mean, I just swallow mine, but maybe I'm not getting the full benefits of that.
You'll do better if you bite them. It, CoQ10 has no flavor, but the oil it's in does. Mm-hmm. And there's one Q product that has a little polysorbate 80 that's an emulsifying agent. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like a soap. That's a little bitter.
Okay.
So, that's the only one. Mm-hmm. All the others don't have that. But.
So the dosage you were using in this study, you saw dramatic improvements in these heart failure patients using ubiquinol 450 to 900 milligrams a day. But say someone who just, you know, like yours truly, you know, I'm in my 60s. I want the cardiovascular protection, but I also want, the energetic support. My mitochondria are aging. What's a reasonable dose, a cost-effective dose? If I take more, would I be wasting my time?
Yeah, I would recommend one of two things. One is to take a 200 milligram size soft gel, mm-hmm. chew it up. It's always better absorbed if you have some fat. You know, you can chew it with a, you know,
that's what? Because I take my supplements with meals, and there's usually some fat present. Yeah,
that's perfect. If in these studies have been done, if you take some volunteers and you have them take 200 milligrams once a day of Q, and you get a blood level after a few weeks, and then you take the same people and switch them to 100 milligrams twice a day, it's about a 20% better blood level.
So interesting, divided doses, because I thought as a fat soluble that it didn't matter. You know, you could just take it, you know, like vitamin D, you can take once a month, you know, and you'll get high blood levels. But this is soluble, but it's still, there are peaks and valleys in the levels.
Yeah, it's only been done once, but it was a good Swedish trial looking at at what dose Q it was saturated, where you couldn't absorb more in one single dose, and it's around 180 milligrams. So it's just a little bit of difference, but for compliance purposes, it's always better to do something once a day. Mm-hmm. So I would say healthy people, either 200 milligrams once a day, or if it's not difficult, 100 twice a day.
And that's ubiquinol, to be clear.
Yeah, at the moment, yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's right, which is your favored. I think, you know, give you credit, because I think you were almost single-handedly the one who launched the ubiquinol revolution, you know, where we had coenzyme Q10, that was the standard. And then we said, well, wait a minute, ubiquinol might be a superior product. I mean, you're talking also about product quality these days, and I didn't even realize that was a consideration. But in terms of its bioavailability, it's more bioavailable than CoQ10, and you'll stick to your guns on that proposition.
Oh, yeah, right. It is more bioavailable, and at the present time, the company that makes it is very reliable, so it's a good product.
Yeah, Canica is a great company, and they do, you know, also support research, which is always important. Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share this important message with you. Here goes.
This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our guest, cardiologist Peter Langgen. Additionally, I mean, as you are aware, coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol have been touted for other benefits other than cardiovascular benefits, neurological benefits, athleticism and overall energy and mood. You know, patients who suffer from fatigue syndromes have been, it's been suggested that they take, you know, coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. What have you, you're a cardiologist, but have you looked at some of these other areas?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, one interesting way to look at it, if you think of athletes, look at these gold medalists, you know, they're almost always either in their late teens or early mid-20s. When you're young, let's say you measure Q levels before and after a run, you know, where you run to exhaustion, there's a drop in Q level from beginning of the run to the end. Well, that drop, when you're young, stimulates every cell in your body to make quite a bit more Q.
And so we synthesize that. We normally synthesize. We don't have to get it from outside sources. We make it.
No. But we make it really well.
Decreasing ability as we age, we our mechanisms for synthesis decline.
Right. And that's why when you're young, you have this training effect. And you can, as you train, your body, all your cells are making more and more Q, a ton of it. And so you're able to run faster, run further. And then when they say when they say they're over the hill when they're in their 30s, in one aspect they are, because when they train and they drop their Q at the end of a marathon or something, they cannot rebound and make Q the way they used to. And that's what when they say they hit a wall, mm-hmm. you know, that term. It's because no matter how hard they try, no matter how diligent they are, they're not going to be able to biosynthesize enough Q like they did when they were, you know, in their teens or 20s. Now, these athletes like this, they definitely do better if they take supplemental Q, and they need to take it, I would say, 200 twice a day. They need a fair amount.
Because mm-hmm. they might be burning the mitochondrial candle at both ends. So
Right. And they definitely do better. And that works.
What about neurological disorders? You know, the brain is, you know, we tend to think of the heart as the real hardest working organ in the body. But the brain really metabolically is even more active than the heart and has tremendous energy demands. The mitochondria are implicated in many neurological disorders, you know, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, you know, even chronic fatigue syndrome. Is there evidence that coenzyme Q10 has applications there?
You know, that's a good question. By the time it's clinically apparent that there's anything wrong with your brain, you've had a lot of cell loss. And so supplemental Q in someone, say, presenting with an obvious neurodegenerative disease, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, or even ALS. And incidentally, all these things are increasing. Q may have a little benefit, but it's nothing too remarkable. In fact, you may want to consider this in a future podcast. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Dr. Paul Cox. He's from Jackson Hole, Wyoming. He's a PhD. Mm-hmm. He's done beautiful work with the amino acid L-serine, S-E-R-I-N.
Yeah, I've heard of that work. And it dovetails also with sort of the blue algae story, to some extent.
Well, yes, right. The cyanobacteria create a neurotoxin, that BMAA, and serine seems to displace that in your brain. And I've been absolutely fascinated by his work. And there's two big trials that just started this year here in the States using a tablespoon. It comes as a powder.
It was actually written up in I think, Forbes magazine, you know, so.
No, actually, it was Fortune.
Fortune magazine. Fortune, Forbes, yeah.
In fact, if your listeners just put in Fortune, serine, and then the name Paul Cox, they'll pull that up. And it's a really good interview with him.
Great. That might be a potential future guest. Thank you for the tip.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with Q, but it's a fascinating topic.
So, okay, so the dictum these days, you know, you're going to take a statin. I mean, look, you have concerns about statins, but the reality of it is that the pressures are enormous. Doctors are, you know, it's standard practice. You know, it's almost like you can get sued for malpractice if some harm should come to your patient if they're not on a statin. You know how it is in medicine. And also patients, I think, are really stampeded into opting for statins. If you're on a statin, should you be taking coenzyme Q10? I think the answer is obvious. But can you overcome, at least in part, some of the adverse effects of statins? How much do you need to take?
Oh, boy. Well, you know how I feel about that. I mean,
right.
It's like the Hippocratic Oath, first do no harm. So
yeah, I know. It's like it's a Hobbes choice. It's a sort of a, you know, Hobbesian choice. It's like, yeah, okay, given that they're going to do something that you're not that crazy about, how do you exercise a little harm reduction?
Well, in my practice, I never, ever prescribe statins.
Wow. That's an amazing statement from a practicing cardiologist. Wow.
Yeah. There is no indication for them ever. So that's number one. But if you're talking about the population in general, and you're right, there's enormous pressure to prescribe these. I can say there's one bit of sort of silver lining or optimism in the future, and that is patients are waking up. They are increasingly non-compliant with all this nonsense, and not just statins, but you know, you name anything in medicine, they are more skeptical, which is a great thing. And but if you're stuck taking a statin, or if you have a loved one who, by golly, they're going to take it because their doctor told them. Well, yeah, then taking some Q, I would say 200 milligrams twice a day, is at least going to offset some of the fatigue. They won't feel so tired. It'll offset some of the impairment of heart muscle function. You're never going to, you know, reverse the effects of the cholesterol being low itself, which louses up everything. But it definitely can, I would say, ameliorate the adverse effects.
Okay, so there is still some rationale for suggesting that statins be teamed up with ubiquinol, and the dose that you think is the sweet spot for some efficacy, at least partial efficacy, a little higher than some people might be taking. A lot of people taking maybe 100, that may not cut it. 200 twice daily, especially if you chew it up, make it more bioavailable, that might be more efficacious way of doing it.
Right. Yeah, it's noticeable. I mean, Q levels will sort of reach a peak or a plateau in a couple of weeks, and then that gets taken up really well by cells. And so most people can tell a difference, certainly in their energy level, within 3 to 4 weeks.
Do you recommend routinely measuring coenzyme Q10 levels in patients taking ubiquinol or coenzyme Q10? Is that of practical value? Because, I mean, we've talked to one of our good colleagues, and you're very familiar with him, Dr. Stephen Sinatra. He likes to measure levels. Is that a good way to go?
Yeah, it's a good, great question. It is now. The commercial labs, and we use, because it's right across the street from me, we use Quest. Originally, or go back 10 years, they didn't offer the test. And then when they started doing it, It was a type of assay that wasn't terribly good. But I'd say over the past several years, four or five, the commercial lab assays are very good. They're as good as a research lab. And so, yeah, it's a very useful thing to check. If we're going to do that, send someone to a commercial lab for Q, we always check it with a total cholesterol, because the, you know, Q is carried it along with other fat soluble essentials in your lipoproteins. And so, for instance, if you had someone whose cholesterol level was 400 versus somebody same age, weight, his cholesterol level was 200, and you check their Q level, the one with the higher cholesterol is going to have a higher Q because they have a higher carrying capacity in the blood. So it's a little more accurate to check.
So you will adjust for cholesterol. There's a way of adjusting.
Yeah, it's like in our publications, we have not only the absolute value of the coenzyme Q in the blood, but also the ratio to cholesterol.
So as a cardiologist, are you a one-note Charlie with coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol, or do you recommend other ancillary nutrients for people with heart problems?
Oh, you know, for many years, this is back when I was practicing with my father before he died, we actually put in a fair amount of effort looking at adding L-carnitine.
Mm-hmm.
That's essential. You know, it's essential for transport of free fatty acids in the mitochondria where they're burned for fuel. Mm-hmm. It may help a little bit, but it's not terribly impressive. The thing with carnitine, of course, you get it from meats, but even true hardcore, you know, vegetarians or vegans, they still have normal carnitine because you can make it.
Make it, right.
So
lysine and, you know, some other things.
Yeah, a couple of simple amino acids you can make your own. So I'm not so sure about that. You know, there were times when we thought maybe it was helpful. And then there's other nutrients that have sort of come and gone. You know, taurine is, if a cat doesn't get it in its cat chow, they get a cardiomyopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And so the idea was, well, maybe humans could use it. I've not seen that do too much either. Mm-hmm. And then the most recent, and I know that Steve Sinatra is a fan of D-ribose.
Yeah.
Again, we make our own D-ribose. There's a couple of studies where you take a bunch, like a whole scoop, you know, mm-hmm. this ribose. It tastes good. It's slightly sweet. It's pleasant. I've not seen that really, you know, at least not that I've been convinced of, improve heart muscle function.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. I mean, you've really, you know, one of the reasons I do these podcasts is I learn a lot. I think our audience has learned a lot about, from your experience with coenzyme Q10 and ubiquinol. And you have some novel observations about the right way to take it, which I think a lot of people were not aware of, the right amount to take. And, you know, also, you got some pretty strong feelings about statins, which ought to give some people pause about lockstepping with the recommendations that virtually everyone over a certain age, you know, certainly, you know, you're a 65-year-old male, you know, you're almost certain to be prescribed a statin, almost, you know, irregardless of, if that's a word, regardless of what your cholesterol is. And that's, I think, you know, pretty successful campaign on the part of the pharmaceutical industry. Where can people find out more about some of your articles? Maybe they want to access your articles critical of statins. Are they somewhere accessible?
Yeah, you know, your site's probably a better source of information than anything I might have. But, you know, a lot of these things, you know, if you just search, all these things are accessible on, say, PubMed. If you just put in Langshan and coenzyme Q,
Let's spell your name, because that's the joke point, right? Because it's right, a little hard to spell.
Yeah, it's L-A-N-G, then S-J-O-E-N.
Okay. And if you put Langshan statins or Langshan cholesterol, we're going to see some of your articles, especially the recent one, which is, okay, so, you know, final question. What are you facing, you know, approbation or ostracism among your cardiology colleagues? Are they kind of like, you know, you go to cardiology conferences and everybody sort of turns away and the conversation stops and, you know,
what? Oh, you know, it's not as bad as you might think. They sort of tolerate me. That's a good question. Like, for instance, I'm a member of the Texas Club of Cardiologists, great group of very, very prominent cardiologists in the state. And I've given them talks on Q before, and I'm going to give them a mm-hmm. overview on this statin-associated cardiomyopathy probably in April, this coming April. And, you know, they're very, very polite. They're curious. Some of them themselves take coenzyme Q. At any rate, I haven't had any difficulties. Now, if I worked in a university setting mm-hmm. or if I were in a big group practice, there might be some friction there.
Right, especially if, you know, if you buck the recommendation to put all your patients on statins. I mean, that, I think, is one of the prerogatives of private practice, is that you can determine what's best for your patients without outside interference or guidelines that compel you to prescribe in a certain way.
Right, exactly.
Okay, well, great stuff. Thanks very much for joining us again. And, you know, I'm sure we'll revisit with you in a little while, you know, as you continue to churn out research and publications. It's really been a pleasure.
Oh, likewise. My pleasure.
That was Dr. Peter Langgen. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com.